It's the Back Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the Tour B ball with Mindset Technology. By the club at Sea Palms. By PXG, you've never played like this before. By RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community. By Stitch Golf, dress your game. And by CJ's Italian Restaurant, voted best pizza, known for their great deep dish and thin crust pizzas, plus much, much more. Check out their full menu at CJsRestaurant.com. On the show, we're going to talk with Michael Morgan, who is the owner of Fitted Fairways, where you can now check out all their new brands of clubs that you can get fitted for, and SimCraft, his new company, working with golf simulators and how popular they've become. Also, we'll talk with Todd Thompson, the tournament director of the RSM Classic, now with the new challenges now with limited fields, which will affect this year on the PGA Tour. Then we'll talk with Clark Spratlin, the director of golf at Sea Palms, on their membership and some tips on how to improve your game. Now, here's my interview with Michael Morgan. With Fitted Fairways, now with two locations, which we'll talk about, but also with SimCraft, talking about golf simulators. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for having me again.
Tell us about SimCraft. I mean, this is a relatively, even though you've been doing golf simulators for a while, but now you've opened up a separate company for it.
We have. So naturally, with these indoor golf environments, people end up loving them, want to know how they can get one, where they can get one, who can build them. And due to us building our own, when we started Fitted Fairways and building our own in Jacksonville at the new location, we didn't have anyone to recommend. So started more as like a, yeah, sure, I can help you build one or design one. Then we ended up getting four or five of those in a row in a 1 month span. And so it just kind of prompted the, all right, this seems like it could be a business of its own. And that's where we started.
Are more people putting them in their garages, or are they just putting up separate buildings, or trying to fit them into wherever they can in their house?
A mixture of all three of those.
Okay.
So the first few were, actually the first one was in a garage, and that was back in March. It was a family friend. He didn't know where else to turn. Hey, they came to us, and we went and put one in. And under
right.
that, at that time, we did it under the Fitted Fairways banner. We went and put one in his home. He worked with my mother for 25 years, so that was an easy one for us. But didn't think that would really turn anything. He did his in a garage, and it did really well. He still loves it. We're in contact every once in a while about the new software and some new features that are coming out. The very next one I did was here on the island, upstairs in more or less like a playroom.
Okay.
It was a perfect fit for that little area that we did it in. Now we're getting some requests for external buildings. Luckily, I just by happenstance did one as a result of the Meet the Pros event. Did one out in Jessup, Georgia. The gentleman we did that for owns a company that does exterior buildings, the smaller types. So we're looking to possibly do a little bit of business with him and some of the customers that we currently have in the pipeline that want an external place to play. Because they, you know, you go into your, you know, your little playroom upstairs or your guest room or your bonus room, and the ceilings aren't tall enough, or it's not wide enough, not deep enough. There's usually something. And then in the garages, what we see a lot is, you know, the garage doors are actually on rails. And so although your ceiling may be tall enough, the rails stick way out. And so you either have to completely remove the railing or change. And they now make these garage door rails that go up real high into the ceiling. So you have to do a lot more changes to your space than you probably expected to do in a garage. So the exterior thing is becoming more and more popular. You'll see them on Instagram. There's companies all over the country that'll do these exterior buildings. They get a lot pricier doing that, but it is a market that's growing to have the external. But most popular are already established rooms inside the home or garages.
Well, that was the next question I was going to ask you. How much room do you need? Because I know it varies, and how big of a screen do you want, but that also depends upon how much room they have.
It does. The best way to think of it is your aspect ratio for the launch monitor that you choose. And so this is where it gets very complex. Some launch monitors support what they call one-to-one. So think about a 10-foot wide room, 10-foot tall ceiling. You want to make the screen fit within that. Usually it's not 10 feet, it'll be 9 feet 6 inches to give yourself the padding and places to anchor. But not all the launch monitors and not all the software support one-to-one. So now you're looking at 4x3, so then your room needs to depend on the width based on that software and the launch monitor choice. So it gets really complex. But what we've noticed is the smallest is comfortable is around 11.5 feet wide on the screen. You start getting shorter, tighter than that, it can feel uncomfortable.
Okay.
But that also depends on distance from screen. So a lot of things tie into the launch monitor, because if you go with a radar base, you got to be 10 feet or further from the screen for the radar to actually give you accurate numbers. If you go with a ceiling mount like we have here in our stores, you can be as close as 8 feet. Technically, you only need 3 feet above flight, but when you get up closer than 8 feet, it feels like you're going to touch the screen. So the space requirements heavily revolve around your launch monitor choice. And we usually, when we get into like a consultation, we'll flip that around. And we'll recommend launch monitor based on your room size. So you can go as room width, 12 feet is probably as narrow as you want to go.
Okay.
You get smaller than 12 feet, you can do it. But then your hitting zone becomes drastically offset.
Right.
So if you're buying it for yourself, everyone that's going to ever hit on it's right-handed. Sure, makes it easy.
Right.
If you have a mixture, you want to have friends over and righty-lefty, that becomes now where you have to develop two different hitting zones. Your launch monitor needs to be a ground-based or one like we did up in Atlanta recently. We put a ceiling-based launch monitor on a slider. So we built a rail system in the ceiling so that they could still use the above you type launch monitor, ceiling-based launch monitor, because those do have some benefits in terms of how the camera angles work. And they can slide it back and forth, which is pretty neat. So it does depend. And that room was actually 11.5 feet wide that we did that one in.
So when someone makes a call, they're interested in setting up a system. Basically, one of the first things you got to do is how much room do you have? Where are you thinking of putting it? You may make a home visit and say, we think it'll fit here. Or he says, I'm going to go with an extra building.
Sure. Yeah. So typically the start is we try to get on a phone call so that discovery session to find out, you know, a couple of things. One, your room, where you're thinking of putting it, that those dimensions. We still want to do a site visit even if we get all the dimensions, and that's we've run into that problem a couple of times already with the garage builds and those
rails.
You know, we'll get somebody that says, yeah, well, I've got a 15 foot wide space, 20 feet deep, 10 foot ceilings, you know, we're checking all the boxes. But then you get in there and we got the garage door opener itself to deal with, the rails, and so that room configuration becomes different. But we do obviously start with dimensions, but we also start with a budgeting specifically for the launch monitor. The rest of it, there's a lot of play, right? You can get the kind of the out-of-the-box, and Foresight used to call them sim-in-the-box. It's basically some fabric. You put it around metal EMT. It's not the most pretty look, but it's functional. You throw a screen up. Or you can go full built into the walls like we have in some of our stores here where, you know, we're building physical walls. We're tying everything into what looks like it's built into the home. So the enclosure expense can get as cheap as, you know, $1,000 all the way up to something that's in the $40,000-$50,000 range. It just depends. So the enclosure is not where we focus first. We focus on launch monitor. Because those vary pretty drastic as well, but the launch monitor being so heavily tied to the space, you start there and then you build around the launch monitor. So, you know, something like a radar where you need 10 feet of ball flight and it needs to sit 8 to 10 feet behind you, you know, you need 20 feet of depth in your room to make a radar system work correctly. Where if you're a little bit tighter room, launch monitor in the ceiling, all you need is 8 feet of ball flight, perfect. ground-based launch monitors, or we recommend those a lot for the guys that want to also take their experience out to the range.
Okay.
So the ground-based can be radar systems, but things like the Foresight GC Quad, the GC3, Bushnell is very popular, and we really like the Unicore software. They've come a million miles from where they started, and it's a very user-friendly experience. The numbers are very accurate, and the price is tolerable. Because something like a GC Quad's wonderful for the aspiring tour player, or the plus handicapper, the person that's really trying to dial in and get very accurate numbers. And accurate, we mean we're getting down into decimal points.
Right.
Versus the Unicore giving us the same experience for a fourth of the price. You know, you're not getting into fractions of numbers in terms of your club path and your spin, but you're getting accurate enough numbers to go out and play.
Okay.
So launch monitor is the first thing we focus on.
A separate website from Fitted Fairways?
It is, yes. You can get to it through Fitted Fairways. There's a link out to if you want a home build, or we've even had a couple commercial locations in the Alabama area already reach out to do commercial builds, but we primarily focus in residential.
Okay, let's talk about Fitted Fairways. You've got your first location here on St. Simon's Island. You've opened up another one down in Jacksonville. You're looking at some other expansion areas, and you've also got some new brands that are coming on board.
We do. So as a result of going to Jacksonville, when we picked that location, we made sure to not be in the shadow of a PGA Superstore or, right next to a Sea Island-type performance center. And that's been one of the challenges with our current location, St. Simon's, was always Sea Island's performance center and what brands will come in the door or not. Now, thankfully and luckily, over the last few years, that's changed, and we've gotten more and more brands here in St. Simon's. But because of Jacksonville, we've picked up Callaway and Ping. And we're working right now with our Titleist rep to maybe hopefully get in Titleist and FootJoy. So right now the only brand that we don't have throughout all of the Fitted Fairways locations is Titleist, and we're in those final talks with them. So hopefully that will get some traction here after the PGA show, and we'll see where Titleist goes. But yeah, right now we've got all the rest.
So when you go down to the PGA show, tell me what. You're going to meet with a bunch of folks. What's your game plan going down?
Yeah, so especially with the two different businesses, the first half of the PGA show this year, because we'll start with Demo Day, is going to be heavily focused on the Fitted Fairway side of things. So that's any new shaft companies, even the current ones that we have, any of the new models, same thing with club companies. Because right now what we've noticed is there's actually two very different demographics in terms of the type of player that we're seeing in Jacksonville versus what we're seeing here in St. Simon's. So making sure that we're putting in the equipment that's for our customer base in each location makes sense. Because I don't need to put the ultralight heads, a bunch of senior and regular flex shafts into the Jacksonville location if our customer base right now is a lot of 10 handicaps and below. I need the more LS heads and the better player stuff there. So just we're trying to tailor based on our demographic, but we also don't want to box anyone out. So just trying to make sure we stock up where we're supposed to. But examining all the new equipment, because some of the stuff is wonderful, some of it's small iterations, but that's the golf industry. It's always like that. So heavily focused on Fitted Fairways the first couple days, and obviously the latter half I'm going to be focused with SimCraft and talking to the launch monitor companies. And now we're getting these companies, we have one of these builds coming up where we're going to be doing a Murphy bed style build in someone's garage because they still want to be able to park their car into it. So they want a simulator in the garage, but they also want to park their car in the garage, so being able to quickly pull the flooring up, the hitting area, and hiding the screen and all that. So there's a couple of companies out there that build Murphy bed style sims. So we're talking to them, hopefully to partner with. If not, then we'll try to build one of our own. But that's going to be, a pretty neat concept in the future.
Let's jump back to SimCraft. What is the length of time? And I know this is probably a question that has many different answers. What's about the average of, yes, I want to do it, you've gone out, you found a location, how much time for installation before it's ready to use?
Sure. We've done, the fastest we've put one in has been 1 day.
Oh, okay.
That is the sim-in-the-box style simulator.
Gotcha.
Right. That's because those, they unfold, everything's already kind of milled, pre-assembled, laser cut for you when you get in. It's, they're fast to set up. And we've done one that takes as long as 2 weeks.
Okay.
And that's your custom build. You know, you're, we're tailoring everything for your space. And so that becomes a little bit longer tail of a build. But ultimately, it's usually in that range.
Okay.
Now, I think when we start looking at exterior buildings, that'll differ a little bit because you'll have to, customer will have to find a way for us, either us or a contractor, to pour a concrete slab. The building has to go on it. Do you want to put insulation in the building? Do you want to put walls in the building?
Right.
So that's going to obviously be a little more than two weeks. But if you have a current space, garage, or in your own home, the longest we've done is 2 weeks. Now, what we typically do see in those custom builds is as we get into it, and customer, we like to have them present during the building process to, you know, if they want to make any changes on the fly, they can. And so we've had a couple of those where, hey, we might want to change the way the wall padding is, or the way we're padding the ceiling, or we've even had some hitting mat changes last minute. And so those will obviously pause another order
and
come in. But overall, physical build time, less than 2 weeks.
Awesome. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Yep, thank you.
Hi, this is Brent Clements from Hahn McGolf, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. We're with Todd Thompson, the tournament director of the RSM Classic here on St. Simon's Island at the Sea Island Resort. Todd, the fall schedule. Talk to me about the fall schedule for this year.
Well, there have been some changes, Rich. Good from our standpoint. We're still in the same spot we've been in the last 12 years. We're the last event of the year, so everything will culminate with us with the FedEx Cup for the top 100 at Sea Island in late November, the week before Thanksgiving. But there are some changes to the fall. We've got two events that went away, and then three were added. And still one of the ones that went away may come back, the one out in Napa. There's a chance that may stay on the schedule. But right now, they added Asheville, and they added Austin, Texas, and they moved Vedanta, Mexico, from the spring to the fall. So the fall will start after the playoffs in September in Asheville, North Carolina. And then you'll see the President's Cup. So there's a little gap in there for regular tournament golf. And then you'll see them go to Utah, Japan. Then they move Bermuda into October. And then after Bermuda, you go Mexico, the good event in Austin, Texas, and then the RSM Classic will finish the season.
Always good to be the last one because it means the field, people that are fighting to be in that top 100 or top 60 or top 50 for various reasons for the tournaments that they're able to get into. But that's always an exciting time just to see what it does to your field.
Oh, for sure. It just creates storylines. Whether a player wants a storyline or not, there's going to be a storyline there for those guys that are hovering, you know, right around that 95 to 110 mark. And further back, if somebody wins that week, that's farther down. But, you know, we had a great champion in 2025 that was in good position, but won. And Sammy of Valamaki got him into the Aeon 10, so now he's playing the first two signature events of 2026.
Let's talk about the changes on the PGA Tour starting this year. A lot of drama on the top 125, now down to the top 100. I know it's not an exciting time for those players that are not in the top 100, where they would have been in the top 125. What kind of things have you heard from any of the players around here?
Well, we've had some of our local players go from PGA Tour to, to Korn Ferry because of the change. They may have been in the top 125 and had a tour card for 2026, but now they're playing on the Korn Ferry Tour. But I think what the tour is doing is that if you have a PGA Tour card, you'll get most events. Because the field sizes are dropped. I mean, Hawaii last year was 144 players, and this year is 120 at the Sony this week. So if you come out of Q school or you finish, let's say, 19th on the pecking order at the Corn Ferry, you know, from 2025, and you get a tour card, now it means more because you got a better chance of getting into a tour event instead of bouncing back and forth between the PGA Tour and the Corn Ferry Tour.
But don't they do a shuffle every now and then during the season? You know, you could be 19, and all of a sudden with a shuffle, you could be number three?
In certain categories, yes. So if you're in the Corn Ferry category and you get in the first few events and play well, let's say you're number 19, and you play well, you will, in that category, move up ahead of someone, say, number three that did not play well.
So it's all based on how you're playing at that particular moment for your opportunity to move up when they do a shuffle. And how many shuffles do they do during the year?
Oh, I should know that number. It's usually between three and four, maybe every six, seven, eight events. They'll do a reshuffle, depending on what the events are, because, you know, you got the signature events in there, which are really kind of jammed in there together when we get into late spring. When you put the signature events, the players, and a couple of the majors, I mean, there's a lot going on between March and June.
So in the top 50, you get an invite to the Masters, plus you get an invite to the Masters if you have a PGA Tour win through the Tour Championship. What are some of the other numbers? Top 60, top 75, does that do anything?
Well, there's FedEx Cup numbers and there's World Golf Ranking numbers. So everybody that was in the top 50 at the end of the calendar year, all those guys get invited to the majors and Masters. And then top 50 FedEx Cup, yes, they got exempt into the majors for 2026, plus the, well, not all the majors, not British, but the U.S. Open, well, not even the U.S. Open. PGA and the Masters.
Okay.
They got those for sure. But top 30 now getting everything that were in the top 30 in Atlanta in 2025.
The fields are now going to be smaller, which means that the RSM, your exemptions are going to be cut in half, which makes your job and your team's job quite a bit more difficult. Especially with some of the local players that you have given exemptions to before and those players that you would consider, that really doesn't tie your hands, but it does cut your opportunities and choices in half.
Before I commit to what's going to happen in the fall, and it is from 8 to 4, it may be easier, potentially, because usually we pick the 4 pretty quick. Depending on who's asking. And it's usually the harder decisions that 6 through 8 or 5 through 8. We're reduced the number of players that can qualify on the Monday. That's from 4 to 2. So they're just smaller fields. The section, the Georgia section, still gets their champion or player of the year, whatever they deem their top player. That player still gets an exemption into the RSM.
So from a player standpoint, for the RSM, are there still going to be the number of tournaments prior to in order to try and get in that you've had before, but there's going to be less opportunity to get in the RSM on the final day on that Monday that's usually played at Brunswick Country Club?
In the qualifiers, are
yes,
you asking?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's typically 4 pre-qualifiers, 3 in our area and 1 in Atlanta. And then Monday of tournament week, we have, you know, the Monday qualifier for the RSM, which is, you know, typically always at Brunswick Country Club.
And usually that takes a pretty good number. I mean, you've got to be in mid-60s or lower, possibly, I'm sure, depending upon weather at that point. But you've really got to be on your game, which puts a lot of pressure on some of these guys. And you've got, what, 80-some-odd guys playing for 2 spots?
Right. You know, they changed the course to par 70 because there's a couple shorter par 5s there. So, yeah, 64, 63 this year maybe, depending on the weather. You know, if you shoot 66, you're shutting the trunk and going home most likely, unless we have severe weather.
Right. All right, you're also involved in the Junior Tour, and the the opportunity for these juniors to move up and to play, they're playing at such a high level at such an earlier age than they were 5 and 10 years ago. Do you see the same?
Definitely. You know, you see it. These kids are seeing what the tour pros are doing. You know, it's kind of the Tiger effect from 20-something years ago or 30 years ago now. Now he's 50, which is unbelievable. But,
yeah.
You know, they're working out. They're stronger. They're more, which I don't always agree with, just going to one sport. But a lot of kids are going to one sport, so they're getting better at that one sport. But, you know, definitely there's better instructors. There's better equipment. There's better golf balls. There's better conditioned golf courses. And these kids are getting – that are jumping in. And, you know, COVID a couple of years ago attracted more kids to play golf because – that was about all you could do, something outside. And so they jumped to our sport, fortunately. So the game of golf is thriving right now with the number of players.
Yeah, GSGA, when I talked to them last week with Matt Vanderpool, he was their executive director. He was telling me that their junior program has grown significantly over the past few years, which means they're trying to get into events that you're helping with. Their quality of play, their fitness, their mental state. I just find it interesting. And also exciting for these young kids to be able to play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is year 32 for our junior tour, the Southeastern Junior Golf Tour. And, man, watching the change over the years and the number of kids on wait lists, the scores they shoot, it's fun to watch. I mean, we start at 12 years old and go through 18, and we watch these kids grow and develop, and they go through their awkward stage where they lose some coordination, and then when they get it back, they're even better. And but you know, you still gotta. There's no secret pill. There's no secret one way to do it. It's just getting out there and grinding and learning how to win and beat people.
Yeah, I mean it's just changed the game so much, and the money on the PGA Tour has increased. Y'all did a great tournament. You ended up raising over $4 million, and you're now over $50 million, I think, for the time that we've had it.
Yeah, you know, RSM's our great partner, and we call them the best title on tour, just because we work so well together. But yeah, we bumped over $53 million this year in 16 years, and it's incredible. We're able to help a lot of local communities, charities in the local community, and it's fun to see that. And this is the time of year where we're tallying everything up from the previous year and writing checks and seeing how that money can be used.
And you also won a couple of awards, not awards, but you were told you were in the top as far as the fall tournaments.
Yeah, we were ranked number one among the fall events for money raised in a certain time period. I can't remember the year they went back to, but yeah, it's just great. I mean, it shows what we're able to do at this resort, in this community, in the Golden Isles, what RSM does for us, what all of our partners do for us, like Yamaha and the Convention and Visitors Bureau here locally. And I mean, it's a fun event. We're bringing the best players in the world to a local community. People can come out and have fun at the same time we raise money for charities. I mean, it doesn't get any better.
Nope, it doesn't. Todd, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good week.
Hi, I'm Gareth McShay, Aim Point and Performance Coach, and I'm listening to the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. We are at Sea Palms Resort with Clark Spratlin, the Director of Golf. And Clark, talk to us about the future of what's going on at Sea Palms.
Well, Sea Palms is, we're moving along into the future, into our world of becoming a more private resort as part of the Hilton family, as part of the Tapestry Collection, which is a collection of independent boutique hotels across the country with certain standards. And we're looking very much forward to being part of the Hilton family here on the island.
What does, to someone that wants to join or someone that wants to visit, Hilton is a great name, Tapestry is a great name, that means a lot to help you get people to the golf course?
It does. It gives us, a little bit of a leg up on many places in that, A, our golf course is here with the resort. You don't have to drive and leave and go to the golf course. We are here together, but it also gives us a clientele that appreciates the value and luxury that Sea Palms has to offer and that Hilton brings to that property.
A lot of people have a lot of choices of where they play. Sea Palms is located right in the middle of St. Simons. How would you describe Sea Palms and the golf course to someone who may not be familiar with it?
Sea Palms, well, and the golf especially, because our ownership and our company that we work for, understand the value of a golf course that's in great shape with great greens and is fun to play. And there's a lot of investment going on to make sure that our golf course is the value that it is, that we are. It's hard to compete, as is always with other things here on the island, but we try not to compete, but we also try to give you, you know, a fun golf course that everybody can play, but from PGA Tour player, past champions, to beginner, you know, junior golfer, but they have a good time. But when they're having that good time, is that the conditions and the golf course are of value to what they're doing.
So from an ownership standpoint, the investment that they want to make and that you're helping them make and advising them on is important for someone who wants to come and visit and play Sea Palms.
Absolutely. Without it, we're not competitive in the market. We've got a great location, but if you've got bad greens and bad fairways and things that aren't, and you don't see reinvestment and capital improvements, then it's just another golf course. We want to be a destination. We are a destination because we're on the island, we're in the middle of the island. Our conditions on a regular basis are as competitive with anybody on this island, and I mean anybody.
How challenging would you describe Sea Palms golf course to be?
I think it's a pretty good challenge. We have a lot of PGA Tour players. We've got a lot of members, good players, and they continue to come back and play. It's not a one and done. It's a that's too hard or that's too easy. It's just the golf course presents itself as a challenge. And obviously, like any other golf course, you learn different tricks here or there to save a shot. But it's the number of people who come back and play year over year over year over year. Plus, weekly and monthly, and our membership that is very good to us, and they are very active and play a lot of rounds of golf.
Talk to me about the future of your practice facilities that'll be coming up.
So there's obviously going to be some capital improvement. We continue, we have the Miracle, which is our members only practice facility that gets greatly used. It gives you a chance as a member to go practice shots like you hit into the greens. You have multiple greens, multiple bunkers, places to learn. We all know that chipping and putting make your score slow down faster, a lot faster than just wailing on drivers in a range. We do look forward to getting our range, our practice area back reconstructed in a new reconfiguration. We have several iterations on the drawing board that we hope are coming later this year. If everything falls into place, we're going to have something very special in the site of the old quote-unquote driving range. But there's going to be a special facility there. And like I've said, I've seen the drawings and the iterations, and hopefully that's going to start very soon.
All right. Before you and I were talking, you were telling me that this is a great facility and a great golf course for some of the PGA guys, and they play here, and then they go on to a win on the tour.
Yes, we have some really good games. One of them specifically, we call it the world's best Friday game. We have an amazing game, and we have been blessed to have a number of tour players play within a week or two of their wins on the PGA Tour or another event, and they just happen to be here, and it may be just a very blessed coincidence. Maybe it's not. We do pride ourselves, Justin Collette and Dale Stevens, our superintendent and our director of agronomy, pride themselves on having we keep our green speeds up pretty fast and keep the greens in really good condition so that you're playing, even though our golf course is not very long, especially for the guys who hit it so far, but to know that the course record is 58 or 59, which, you know, 59 down the street during a tour event was a record, but it hasn't gone lower than that. We think it should, but the greens and the golf course do have some protection, and it just gives them, I think, the enjoyment that those players get when they're here and the fact that they can play and prepare on conditions and kind of play at the pace they're used to playing. It makes it really special.
The PGA Tour pros that have won after they've played here, you said Davis and Drew. Mm-hmm. Tell me some others.
We've had Andrew Novak, Ben Griffin, trying to think who else, Patton Kizzire. They've been around. They
pretty
play.
Good list.
Pretty good list. And they play here. It's just an interesting coincidence that they played you know, somewhere within a week or 10 days, 2 weeks of their next win. And we're not going to publish that. It's not something we hang our hat on, but it's a lot of fun to talk about. And they come back, you know, we have a lot of, you know, we get a lot of players that come our way and that spend some time with us or join a friend. And it's really fun to see. And we talk about our game as I don't know where else, you really can play against a tour player on a Friday, compete against them. You may not be playing with them, but you get to compete against them and have a lot of fun doing it.
All right, tell me more about the Friday game, because I've heard about it a lot and that the Friday game is really the thing to do on a Friday afternoon.
It's just a lot of fun. It's a level playing field. It's a Stableford game. It's a, you know, it's a modified point quota game. And, you know, you're looking at some players that have quotas, even some local guys that have quotas at 48, 52.
Whoa.
Versus somebody, and we have everybody, then we have people who play have a quota of 6. It's all based on your own skill level.
Handicap.
It's your own handicap. It's relaxed. It's fun. It's, you know, there's a lot of camaraderie. You know, it's open to anybody here on the island. We have lots of members play, lots of professionals play local, and we've got some that'll come down for the weekend and they know about it, and we try to get as many in as we can, just so it's a lot of fun. And I will give some credit where credit's due. It's just, I think Brandon Yeomans up at King of Prince came up with the idea, and we've just kind of run with it and expanded it, and it's just been a lot of fun and a blessing for the club.
All right, point wise, how do you do it? 2 for a par? Yep. How does it go from there?
It's one for a bogey, 2 for a par, 4 for a birdie, 7 for an eagle. But the differentiator for us is it's -1 for a double.
Oh.
Yep, the negatives kick in pretty quickly.
Gotcha.
But also, it helps pace of play. No putting for double. Pick it up. Let's go. Next hole.
All right. Yep. Membership. That's also a key, because there's a lot of places that they could join. Some are private, but you guys are now focusing a lot more on membership.
We are, and we have a great membership. We've got 500-plus members across all categories. Our categories are full golf member. If you're here on the island or anywhere more than 6 months, you become a full golf member. We have a national golf membership. For those that we have, you know, we've got from Iowa, Canada, you know, Illinois, even some from Florida, even some from Georgia, if they live outside the 3-county area here in the Golden Isles. It's if you're here less than 6 months, you can join as a national member. And we have social memberships. We have the Sea Palms West Fitness Facility and a pool over there that's for members only. We have our resort pool, great chef, great restaurant at Sago. We have all the amenities and all the facilities that make up a great club and resort.
And part of the reason why you want to join a club is because of the facilities and the membership, the staff, and part of that also is that they want to improve their game. So you've got Justin and Michael, correct, who are here, and they go with lessons. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So they're doing a lot. They're going to start some new things. We're going to start Operation 36 this year. Justin and Michael will be running all of our member lesson programs, resort lesson programs. Somebody comes in, wants a lesson, we're going to do our best to get you out there and to work on the things, A, that you want to work on, but also to help you. Our biggest job is to make getting better fun, is we want you to get better as fast and enjoy it as much as you can. You know, you go back, there was a lot of history of Hogan, you know, Vijay Singh, beating balls. Well, they didn't beat the balls unless they had fun doing it or enjoyed doing it.
Right.
They never saw it. I know they saw their work as it was a job, but if they didn't enjoy hitting those shots and beating it, so they wouldn't do it that way. But I think now with today's technology, with TrackMan, with video, with being able to, you can get better, faster at this game than ever before. The right club fitting, the right clubs, the right, you know, all of those things matter. But as we see now, we look at the, you know, across my lifetime, we saw PGA Tour pros didn't hit their prime till kind of in their 30s.
Right.
When they got married, they already had children. They'd settled down. They'd gone into a lifestyle. Now you look at these kids that are the Jackson Koivins, the Blades Brown, the, you know, all these kids who are younger, but they got better faster at a younger age because of the technology that was afforded them. Now, a lot of it's natural talent. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
Some are better than blessed with more than others. But you've taken these athletes that are really good and blessed and given them ways to get better faster.
When you take a lesson, I'm sure one of the things, and you used to do that for a lot of, you know, a lot of years. One of the things is, does the golfer who wants to take the lesson, does he really, really, he or she really know what they need to improve? You can look at it and instantly tell them, oh, well, it's the basics that you got to get back to. But do they really know what they need to improve?
It depends, I think, on the level of golfer.
Okay.
I think that, you know, with golf and almost with anything else, even if you're a tennis player or a pickleball player, you think you know what you need to do. And one of the things that I in some of my limited coaching that I do now and teaching I do now, is one of my keys is you can get too dialed in on one thing you think is wrong, but Justin, Michael, myself, great instructors, can really see if that's it. Most of the time, that's not it. There's this focus, and especially as I get older and we all get a little bit older in our golf swing, we're a little less flexible. We forget to finish the golf swing. Everybody gets dialed in, where are my hands? Where am I? Where's my backswing? You got to finish it, and it doesn't matter where you start it, but if it doesn't finish, it's not going to be good.
And when you take a lesson, I've heard people come off lessons and then go play, and they've got so many thoughts in their head, and they go, man, I just had a lesson, and I played horrible. It's the worst I've ever played.
Did you practice the lesson first?
Probably not.
You have your thoughts, your lesson's thoughts, your friend's thoughts, your opponent's thoughts on what you're doing. That's what he taught you? I've always been, I try to, and the way I've taught is I want to give you, if we're going to start, if we're going to break it down, or if we're building it back up, we're going to do one thing. I need you to go practice it two or three times. And it doesn't matter whether you're hitting balls on the range, chipping at the miracle, or if you're doing it on the golf course, you need to execute it a little bit in just a focused situation. You can be by yourself on the golf course hitting practice shots.
Right. Right.
You don't have to be on the range at 5 o'clock doing this. Right. There's different ways to practice, but you need to practice that a little bit. And I go back and, was it Justin Leonard made a comment that he had switched teachers and he was going to Butch Harmon. And he said that it had taken him 30 or 45 days to make one change. And he worked on it every single day. And his comment was, I don't know how the average golfer makes a change if you're playing once a week.
Wow.
Is how do you make a change? It was one of those realizations.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I use to really help my students understand that it, you know, there's some things that'll click and may happen faster, but it's not all going to happen overnight. But if you will start to make it a habit and start to do it that way, then the next thing may get better a little bit faster.
Clark, always. Thanks.
Rich, thank you so much. Appreciate what you do. Good to hear from you.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to Back9Boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at Back9Boys.com.